Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day. Thanks to Vanessa from Banksia, and I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
Welcome aboard the Starship Zero G, science fiction, fantasy, and historical radio for episode number 1592, entitled Eyes as Big as Flying Saucers. Our podcast title, and this is obscure, but I'll explain it as we go along, 55 Pod 5 in a Triangle.
Ooh.
Now, we would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of the Wurundjeri from which we broadcast from and to, and to elders past, present, and future. Welcome back, Megan.
Thank you. Very good to be back. I've been in various different lands, including Land of the Kaiju, but didn't run into any Gojira, thankfully.
How can you go to Japan and not have a G-Day?
I know. I missed out. I was in the subway at one point, though, and one of the stations, I can't remember where it was, but I did take a photo. And there was an exit 8 there, just like the film, and it was all quiet and deserted. And I took a little photo and I was like, oh, it's just like I'm caught in that, you know, never-ending purgatory loop as well.
And you've been to Middle Earth?
Indeed, yes. Also been to New Zealand. That was a really fun trip. Decided to jump out of a plane spontaneously. Did a bit of skydiving.
Usually that's frowned upon.
Not by me, but that was really fun. I didn't actually get to visit any of, like, the Hobbiton or anything like that, so I'll just have to do another trip, I think, at some point.
That's a good enough reason.
But it was a beautiful country. Really enjoyed my time in New Zealand. So,
well, so a bit of sad news to start with. The US-American writer Jane Yolen, science fiction, fantasy, and children's book author, and editor of at least 450 books altogether.
Wow, oh my gosh.
Including her own.
Prolific.
Died on June 11th at the age of 87. Mm. Jane was a World Fantasy Award winner, Nebula Award winner, Locus Award winner, practically everything you can name, and the Damon Knight Memorial Grand Master Award winner as well. Born in 1939 in Manhattan, travelled all over the place, really, moved everywhere. Her mother was a psychiatric social worker. Her father was a journalist, and they moved to California because her father became a Hollywood publicist.
Oh.
So you can see sort of a career path opening up there. She had an ongoing interest in writing since childhood. And, you know, that the usual story of published a little newspaper that a brother sold for a few cents.
And, yeah, you know, a hustler.
Yeah. She published her first children's book, Pirates in Petticoats, in 1961, and also edited magazines and books for several different publishers and started her own publishing imprint in the 1990s.
What?
Well, you know, under the wing of a larger publisher. Her most famous book is probably The Devil's Arithmetic, which is a Holocaust novella.
Yes, I've heard of that.
About a girl who time slips back to 1942 Poland. And the novel was adapted into a 1999 Showtime television film with the same title. It had Kirsten Dunst.
That's probably why I've heard of it, yep.
And both the novel and the script that she wrote was nominated for Nebula Awards. She also worked on a little book series called Commander Toad, which is a pop culture referencing series about a spacefaring toad. So it's like all Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, cool, but with a toad.
Yeah. She also did a series of books called How Do Dinosaurs... Do This, Do That. All manner of things.
Fun.
And wrote some songbooks with her son and put out poetry collections as well. A real Renaissance person in terms of the output.
What a contribution.
She did a lot of Arthurian themed stories, which is where I encountered her, including a trilogy about young Merlin and a 1986 collection called Merlin's Book, which is an evocative anthology that collects a lot of Yolen's poems and short stories about Merlin. I was thumbing through that before I came in. Wonderful book. She also did a story called Merlin and the Dragons in 1991, which just became an animation based on illustrations by no less than Lord of the Rings, Alan Lee.
Gosh.
She died at age 87. Her husband, David Stemple, died in 2006. Jane Yolen is survived by three children, photographer Jason, Heidi, who's also a children's book writer, and Adam Stemple, a musician and science fiction and fantasy writer.
Oh.
For 12 years, Adam was the lead singer-guitarist for the band Boiled in Lead. And they do lots of genre songs, and we've got one here. And Jane Yolen wrote the lyrics for this song,
nice.
Robin's Complaint. And this was recorded on the 1994 album Antler Dance by Stemple's band Boiled in Lead. So, Vale, the great genre writer Jane Yolen.
I'm Terry Pratchett, the undeservedly famous author of the Discworld novels, so you can believe me when I say that Zero G on 3RRR is the finest science fiction and fantasy show this side of the Black Stump. I also think Dibbler's delicious pork sausages are the finest eating anywhere in the world, so you know you can trust me on this. Ha 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 ha, with three exclamation marks.
That track was Robin's Complaint by Boiled in Lead, off the back of our In Memoriam there. And we're going to switch gears, and I'm going to talk a little bit about a game that I've just finished, which is, it came out a little while ago, but I've finally caught up with it. It's called Dispatch. And it's actually the perfect travel game. I played it on the plane and sort of out and about and in the hotel on my Steam Deck. But it's pretty much available on almost every platform except for iOS.
How do you play a game on the plane that's not on one of the in-flight entertainment systems?
So I have my own. It's like a handheld little console. It's like a Switch, but it's for PC games. And so you just downloaded the game and I was very prepared. And so then, yeah, when everyone else after the meal service, I pulled out my Steam Deck and fired up this game, which
so
was
so it's
perfect.
Not actually online?
No. Well, it's like you have to download the game.
Yeah. I gotcha.
But no, it's not an online service game. Yeah. So it's called Dispatch. It is a story-driven animated game, and it's got the main premise is there's a branching narrative structure. So based on dialogue decisions that you make throughout the story, there'll be various different outcomes, big and small. It's developed by Ad Hoc Studio. And it was originally released in batches of episodes. So there are 8 episodes in all, and you can play them all. They're all available now. So I just played through all 8 straight away. But originally they kind of did them in these 2-episode drops, which I can see why, because the way the story is structured, it's a really nice way to kind of whip up interest and get people excited. I would say sort of to boil it right down to its bare basics, it's a bit of an oddball superhero story slash workplace comedy. So there is, even though it is animated, as is the case with a lot of animated stuff these days, there is some sort of not safe for work content as well, but you can, so it's not like suitable for children. You can toggle that. I think you can toggle to a censored version, but you know, there's swearing, violence, all that kind of thing. Some genitals, etc. The writing is very, very, very clever, which is kind of what immediately hooked me on the game, and also the voice acting, which we'll kind of run through. But the fact that the characters are so strong and the story comes to life so well is kind of key to what makes this game a success, because you could argue in a lot of ways there is gameplay elements, but it is very much you are watching large chunks of the game as a story unfolds, even though you are involved in where that story goes due to these branching decision trees, like I mentioned. So in terms of the story, I'll give you a little bit of a rundown of our premise before we jump into talking a bit about the actual gameplay. So Robert Robertson III is the...
He's got a good name there.
He does. He's the latest in the Robertson family line to take to the skies in a powered mech suit. So this is why, Rob, I was like, this is so up your alley.
This is my game.
So this suit has been passed down from his father and his grandfather before that, along with the title that comes with the suit of Mecha Man. They didn't really, not that imaginative a name, but we'll go with it. So Mecha Man is one of the many superheroes and supervillains operating in this alternate Los Angeles. There are Superman-like alien superheroes. There are these D&D-inspired warriors. There's acid-infused supervillains. There's women with invisibility powers. You know, men with kind of fire, water, all different mm-hmm. kinds of things. The list goes on and on. And so how do these superheroes in this kind of modern-day city save the day in an efficient and organized manner? Well, they are dispatched to various incidents throughout the city that are called in by subscribed callers to SDN, the Superhero Dispatch Network, of course. We have a little bit of order here. But of course, you know, the superhero business and the Robertson family business of being Mecha Man is a quite dangerous one. And given the fact that Robert has no powers outside of the suit, he'd kind of long accepted that he was likely to die in the suit one day.
How that feels.
As is the family tradition also. Not a spoiler, this is all kind of part of the setup. So Robert's kind of going out to these battles as Mecha Man. He's kind of really put a lot of his life into this pursuit, but there's a battle with the supervillain Shroud, which doesn't quite go Robert's way, and his mech suit is destroyed. And due to his subsequent fall from grace into a mere everyman stature, Robert's best option is to take a gig at SDN as a dispatcher. And he's the dispatcher for the Z Team, as they call it, 'cause it's America. The Z Team, which is not the top tier superhero team, nor is it the second, third, or fourth tier. In fact, they're a bunch of kind of former bad guys, former misfits and villains trying to make good, and they're still kind of getting the hang of that doing good thing. So kind of the overall, I'm not obviously going to spoil a bunch of the story, and I can't really because it does depend on some of the decisions that you make. But some of the key questions are, you know, will the ragtag group of ex-villains turned good guys, will they step up and save the day? Will Robert ever be able to repair and get back into his Mecha Man suit? Will there be an office romance that blossoms between one of two options? You've got the troubled Invisigal or the kind of overachiever top dog blonde blazer. And also, you know, Robert's got to be managing his team, the Z team, and managing, you know, who's going to be making the cut, who might not be quite up to scratch, et cetera. And all of these will kind of have implications for where the story goes. So that's the premise and setup of Dispatch. It's a game. There is gameplay, but it's very, very story driven. I think before I sort of dive a little bit more into the finer details, let's hear some music from it. So this is the track Kissing Someone Else. It's by Caroline Kingsbury, and it is from the game Dispatch.
This is Kim Stanley Robinson, author of Red Mars, Green Mars, and Blue Mars. You're listening to Zero G on 3RRR.
That was, Kissing Someone Else by Caroline Kingsbury, and that's from the soundtrack to the game we're discussing, which is called Dispatch. I really love this game. It had me hooked from the first couple of chapters. Obviously, mm-hmm. I love the story set up, as we just discussed, you know, Robert Robertson fell from the sky, got to make a new kind of living and carve out his place in this SDN network as a dispatcher.
Is he a good one?
That's such a good question, Rob. It's almost like you've set me up perfectly. The dispatching is the gameplay. So in addition to the story, so you'll be, you know, there's a little bit of office comedy. There's, you know, some fun characters around and you're kind of navigating your new position and coming across, you know, members of the Z team and whatnot. But then, you know, we'll sit down to do a shift and it's time to dispatch. And you're doing that as the player. Mm.
Okay.
So basically what that involves is you have your little team and calls will come in and you have to dispatch a superhero or heroes whose stats will best match the reported crime or incident. So if it requires speed, if it requires protection, if it requires intelligence, charisma, that kind of thing. So all of your superheroes will kind of start off with different strengths and weaknesses. Of course, as it goes on, you can level them up and so on. And they also have extra buffs. So for example, they might have a special power where if you send them on a call by themselves, they'll perform better. Or if you send them on a call with someone else, their power is to kind of, they'll duplicate, you know, so there's kind mm-hmm. of extra things if you're strategic about it. Then you can really excel in kind of sending these superheroes out to solve these, to deal with these incidents. And then when they come back, they also have kind of a cooldown where they have to rest. So it is a bit of a management sim in that way where you're not just managing who does what, but also who's available, you know, who might be coming up. And the calls kind of come in and you've got a certain amount of time to address them.
See, that's very meta. I love that because usually you're doing that in game, in most games anyway.
Yes.
Something like that. You're building your team or your base, whatever, and choosing it. But that gives you a reason to do it.
Exactly. And they've all got these distinct, the members of the Z team have these distinct personalities, and there's little bits of dialogue even as you're playing the dispatching game that are so well written. Like, the writing in this is so clever, I think, and it's brought to life by some really great voice acting. And so even while you're doing the dispatching, they're having these little interactions over comms that are quite funny, and you get a sense of everyone's personalities even from the first get-go. Now, you asked, is Robert very good at this game, the dispatching? And I would say no, because I'm terrible. I was so bad at that part of the game. I was absolute garbage. I could see that you're meant to, like, level up as a dispatcher, and it just took me so long because I was so bad at it. I mean, you have to really kind of understand who to send to what.
Yeah.
And there'll be certain things where if you send the exact right person, you know, obviously you'll succeed really well. But I won't go into the mechanics, but obviously after a call as well, there's like an assessment and it says whether you succeeded or failed. And I failed so many calls. I was so garbage. And at the end of each chapter, this sort of happens in a lot of these narrative branching games like Until Dawn and stuff, where it'll be like, you and 43% of players decided to blah, 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 you know, and they have this one that's like, you performed better in dispatching than X percent. And the best time I performed, it was like, you performed better than 10% of people at this dispatching segment. So I was pretty, pretty bad at that. There's also a second part of the game, which is like a mini hacking game, which is more of a, like, they're little puzzles where you have to navigate through kind of this maze, which is meant to emulate hacking. And it's timed, and there's like, you know, they kind of get harder as you go along. And I was great at that. That was my strength. I was very, very good at that. But the dispatching, terrible.
But, you know, I mean, you want, how long did you play this for?
So it's a shortish game. Yeah. There's 8 chapters, and that was kind of frustrating for me because as I was getting the hang of it, I was in like chapter 7 or 8. So I knew it was wrapping up soon and I wouldn't get a chance to actually be good at the dispatching.
But if this was an actual job, and oh, I wish it was, you know, it'd take you weeks and weeks
to get accustomed to how to do it. Okay. Thank you, Rob. Thank you. I do appreciate that. I think what's good too is when we think about sort of the narrative as well, there is a really high replayability to this game. Like, the decisions I made and the way I sort of know a little bit about what some of the options and endings are, because you can get sort of different discrete endings based on the decisions you've made. I would be keen to actually replay this, make different decisions, get better at the dispatching, and now, you know, sort of have another go at that and do it better. And I think the fact that the gameplay is actually quite light would normally be a drawback, but in this case, it's a positive because I can replay it for the story and not have to kind of grind through a bunch of rigmarole that I don't want to be doing. Mm. Whereas the gameplay that's there, I'm actually keen to try it again and maybe do better than, you know, the 10% of whatever I had done before. So, yeah, I think that's also a plus when you play through a game and you're like ready to dive back into it. It's kind of rare. I did want to sort of touch on the voice cast. So as I mentioned, part of it is there's a really great sound design, great soundtrack. And like I said, the writing is superb in this, but it really comes together because the voice acting is so good. So we have in the role of Robert, Aaron Paul.
Oh, really?
Of Breaking Bad fame. And he is so good. He sells the character of Robert so much, kind of the nuances of it. He's very, not charming, but I loved the character right away. And I just think his voice acting in this was so, so good. And we also have, I don't have time to kind of go through everybody, but I will also call out Jeffrey Wright, who we know, you know, has been in a bunch of Wes Anderson. He's been in the Bond films, Hunger Game films. He's in The Batman, the new Matt Reeves ones, Last of Us, Westworld, blah, blah, blah. Loads of stuff. He plays a character called Chase, who is a favorite of mine, and a lot of good comic relief in that character as well in the story. So he's probably one of the second standout that I'd probably call out for voice acting. And then also providing voices, we have people who already work in voice acting in games, or they're content creators, or kind of a bit of a mishmash, but everybody does a pretty good job and it really helps the story to come to life as you're kind of playing through each chapter. Overall, I think, even though it has that narrative branching structure, Which could lead to, you know, patchy or inconsistent tone. I do think it hits all the right story beats and notes for me. Mm-hmm. There's conflict, there's love triangles, there's bonding, there's highs, lows, revenge, etc. I do wish some of the decisions had had more weight or more consequence, but
you wanted to get more innocent bystanders killed. Well,
no, I kind of some of the group dynamic stuff. I kind of thought maybe there was going to be some fallout happening, but I think because maybe I made a specific decision at one point, I didn't get to see that come to fruition necessarily. But that's the risk when you have this kind of narrative structure in a game. So I kind of understand that. And now that I know a little more about what some of the story options are, I can see how if I'd made different decisions, I would maybe get to see a little more of that, some of the more of the conflict that I expected that I didn't actually get to see. So
does he get to send any... The dispatcher, does he get to send out any other mecha heroes? So is there jealousy? Like,
well, no one else on the team, but there is another mecha character.
Okay.
So I won't go more into that. But yeah, there's definitely the mecha element. There'll be enough of it in there. It's pretty good. I think as well, yeah, the world building's fantastic in terms of the SDN, like the headquarters as he's sort of setting down to do his shift, and the interpersonal stuff, like the break room. Just little touches, I think. I just, right from the get-go, I was very invested and really wanted to see where the story would go.
I mean, just if this is a game where you're actually being... You're actually playing a game where you're in a call center.
Yeah, pretty much. and you know, I think it can be hit and miss sometimes with these kinds of really, really narrative heavy games.
Yeah.
You know, you maybe yearn for more gameplay or less of this or less of that. But I think this had exactly the right balance. Like I said, I'm ready to replay it even though I only just finished it. And I actually can't really recommend it highly enough. Okay. I think it's one of the best things I've played. I think also the story, I really love the story.
Wait,
I think
one of the best things you've played overall?
This year. Okay. I'll dim that down a little, I know. I think I'd heard it was good. People are ranting about it. A lot of people love it, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, I don't want to have my hopes up too high. But I could tell right from the start, like, I responded well to the comedy that it was giving out. I thought it set up the drama well. Yeah, you know, it's not doing anything wildly new, but it knew how to craft those story beats in a way that really resonated with me.
You showed me a trailer and I had a look at that, and it reminded me very much of watching just about any of the Adult Swim animated shows which deal with superheroes.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, maybe I should watch Invincible. But I did think at one point, oh, should this have been a show? And I actually think you'd miss out on – I enjoy the nuance of getting to pick your own – choose your own adventure.
Yeah, because that's not something that you could convey very well on a regular basis in an animated show.
No, and it's actually it fits in well. The gameplay makes sense in the story. It's not just jammed in there. I mean, the hacking is a little bit. But, like, I think all in all, it's a really well thought out game. So, yeah, Dispatch, it's available on mostly everything. You know, PlayStation 5, it's on Switch now. You play it on your PC. I think it's on Xbox now as well. It's been ported over by now. There's 8 episodes. You can get them all when you buy the game. And like I said before, there is also a really great soundtrack. So I think to kind of lead out of that, let's hear another track from the soundtrack to Dispatch. This one is called Radio and it's by Bershi.
Good gameplay to you.
This is Cory Doctorow, author of Little Brother, Information Doesn't Want to Be Free, and the forthcoming novel Walkaway. And you are listening to Zero G on 3RRR.
That track we heard just then was Radio, very fitting, by Bershi. And that was from the game Dispatch, which I just reviewed and highly enjoyed.
Yeah, it sounds like fun. Now, it would be a mistake to focus on director, writer and producer Steven Spielberg's science fiction work at the expense of all his others. But if this wasn't Zero G, but here we are. Here we are to pull that exact
this
focus.
This is our lot in life. We have to just roll with it.
The Science Fiction Hall of Fame, Worthy Institute, inducted Spielberg in 2005, and rightly so. He's contributed to the genre his entire career, including in his early teens. 1964, at age 17, he made his feature debut film, Firelight.
Ridiculous.
Which he showed in a local theatre. Aliens, the wrap-up to the story was, spoiler.
But I think we're good. Decades out.
Aliens took humans off-world for their human zoo, which is a very Twilight Zone.
Love that. Sort of, I mean.
It was made for $500.
Oh.
And it made $501 at the single box office at $1 a ticket. There someone paid twice, he thinks.
His mum or someone.
It had many of the elements of a much better known later UFO film. But in 1968, he did a short film called Amblin, which of course became the name of his production company.
Yep.
It was his first completed film shot on 35mm, so a proper film. And it landed him a Universal Studios contract where he was doing television directing. Now, I didn't see this at the time, but did catch up with it later. In 1969, Spielberg directed an episode of the Rod Serling anthology series Night Gallery, which was sort of a more horror-orientated...
like a Twilight Zone. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this one was called Eyes, as in peepers, and starred Joan Crawford. And she was a rich lady who wanted to see. She was blind. And she was unscrupulous about it, so she was going to get some eyes transplanted. But they would only function for a short time. And she was quite unscrupulous about
it. She was ready to just replace those bad boys as needed.
And it didn't matter who
she
got them from. And that is actually a science fiction idea.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the twist is, again, spoiler, but, you know, is that just as she opens her eyes, her new eyes for the first time, it's at night and the power goes off. She has to spend a limited time in
Well, that's a comeuppance, that
yes,
is.
Yes, yes, very Roald Dahl-y. Now, speaking of eyes, in the sense of me, it's fitting that the first time I had a close encounter with Spielberg's work was an episode of the television show The Name of the Game around 1971, which is a show about reporting and reporters and stuff. And the episode was called LA 2017. It was written by Philip Wiley, whose name may be familiar if you've heard of the science fiction movie When Worlds Collide. And it was about the character played by Gene Barry who dreams that he's in a dystopic, fascist-run Los Angeles in the year 2017, where the people are bunkered down underground because of air pollution.
Not that far from... Yeah, not much of a stretch, to be fair.
Now, I called the episode today, the podcast title was 55 Pod 5 in a Triangle. So at one stage, Gene Barry is driving, being driven along in a cab and the radio's on and all these sort of 2017 songs, and that was one of them, a mathematical song that was like 55 plus 5 in a triangle. Another one had lyrics like, "We won't be very attractive when we are radioactive." And I remember these to this day because they just stuck in my head. And so that was the first time I encountered him in a science fiction context. He did a lot of television shows at that time, you know, Columbo, did episodes. And eventually he did a television movie of the week called Duel, where he had a brush with science fiction, fantasy and horror writer Richard Matheson, who wrote the screenplay for this, which has got a travelling salesman played by Dennis Weaver who's chased down desert highways in his car by a mysterious truck driver and his tanker truck.
Ooh.
If you've not seen this.
Yes. No, I've. Yeah. We've talked about this, I think, maybe when we've talked about, you know, cars doing bad things.
Yeah. it was a television movie of the week and it got a theatrical run and it opened doors for Spielberg. Eventually he did the Sugarland Express road movie with Criminal Fugitives and that led to Jaws 1975.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest is history. But the science fiction aspects he carried on with Close Encounters of the Third Kind in 1977, in that golden 5 years where we got Close Encounters, Star Wars, Alien, Star Trek the Motion Picture, and eventually, also Superman the movie. You know, so that was this great time and Close Encounters came out. When I saw that at the cinema, I was so blown away by it.
Yeah.
In that last 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I was gripping the edges of my seat.
That's cinema, man.
And my hands locked up. I could not get up. I had to wait until my hands unlocked.
Wow.
Which was incredibly embarrassing. But he directed Raiders of the Lost Ark in 81, working with George Lucas, which is a fantasy movie, but it would eventually segue into a science fiction series of movies with Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny.
Yes.
1993, Jurassic Park, based on the Michael Crichton novel, and also did the sequel, Lost World, Jurassic Park, in 1997. And between 84 and 90, he served as a producer with his production company, Amblin Entertainment, you know, producing movies like Back to the Future, Arachnophobia, Batteries Not Included, I'm hitting the sci-fi points here, The Land Before Time, Men in Black, Deep Impact, Transformers.
Classics.
Cowboys and Aliens, Real Steel, and on television, and also Super 8 with J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yeah.
TV series like Sequest DSV, Falling Skies, and Terra Nova. Yeah, I love the dolphins in it. Although I did wonder about them sort of going, whoa, every time the ship. Okay, in 2001, AI, Artificial Intelligence, the one that he did with the late Stanley Kubrick before Kubrick passed away.
Yes.
Minority Report in 2002, based on Philip K. Dick's story.
Yep.
And War of the Worlds.
Yep.
Which was, you know, H.G. Wells' novel, but with some very hostile aliens.
Yes, and another pairing with Tom Cruise after Minority Report.
Oh, of course, and I forgot to mention E.T. which I have...
It's a given, really.
To this day, never seen all the way through in one session.
Interesting.
Yeah, not through lack of trying, but it just seems to work out that way. I get interrupted, you know. Ready Player One in 2018. Yes. And now, which is VR, so you've got, you know, like UFOs, alien invasion, nice alien visitations, artificial intelligence, predictive intelligence and so on. You know, so he's done a lot.
Yes, he's really covered the gamut of sci-fi tropes in a way.
Mm. And now we have Disclosure Day.
Back to his alien invasion roots.
Yes, indeed. So E.T., Firelight and Close Encounters.
Yeah.
Now, and Super 8 too, if you count that as
a... He had a hand in, I guess. So, yeah, counts.
Free-fingered hand in that too. So let's hear some music from that. This is John Williams, of course.
Of course.
It's called Chase. This one feels like a very traditional John Williams bit of music about a car chase. Mm-hmm. But in this movie, his soundtrack is actually quite a bit nuanced. He's not leading the way with the music a lot. Okay. He's not saying, over there, there's a dinosaur.
Yeah.
It's more nuanced.
Hello, I'm Ray Harryhausen, animation pioneer. You're listening to Zero G on 3RRR FM.
Yeah, we had a track there called Chase, the chase from Disclosure Day, John Williams there. Nice to say how nuanced his soundtrack for Disclosure Day is, but that one was full of John Williams tropes.
The classic little motifs.
If that had come out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you would have not blinked.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's see. The Disclosure Day screenplay by David Cope, who's worked with Spielberg a lot. Spider-Man, he worked on the 2002 one, which is not with Spielberg. Jurassic Park 1 and 2, and the recent Rebirth, War of the Worlds, and Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny, and a lot of other movies besides. So he's actually a billion-dollar screenplay writer as well.
Yep.
Now, this is very much a character-driven movie. So I'm going to examine it from that perspective. They are not quite the common man, everyday folk that is often Spielberg's default. And they're not children. There is a childhood aspect to it.
Okay.
And I saw what you did there, Mr. Spielberg, with the Disclosure Day titles that come up on the screen.
Yeah.
And they some of the letters dissolve, emphasising the letters, so sure.
Oh.
I thought that was quite funny. Now, look, like the Peter Hyams sequel to Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey, this film is set on an Earth that's on the brink of World War III.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts actually with a very violent act of a wrestling boot in the face at a wrestling match. And that's actually the scene for a... what would you call this? A drop, you know, the drop.
Yep.
Like there's a guy there with a backpack with... stuff inside of it that he wants to hand over to somebody else.
Got it.
So you do it in the most public place possible.
Yeah.
Okay, and the man who's doing the drop is Dr. Daniel Kellner. He is a cybersecurity expert, but he is going against the grain here by trying to hand over information.
Ooh, a whistleblower.
A whistleblower, yes. Josh O'Connor plays Daniel.
Josh O'Connor.
Yeah, from The Crown, where we played the Prince of Wales. And he, of course, was the priest in Wake Up Dead Man.
Yes.
He's also been in Doctor Who as well.
Oh.
He's a man on a mission to disclose all the alien encounter AV files the US has notionally been withholding from the public for the past 80-odd years.
Yep.
This is no surprise because it's basically in the trailer. His girlfriend, Jane, has never been fully informed by what Daniel does or who he really works for. She's a trusting soul. Solidly played by Eve Hewson.
Also like her.
Yeah, a former nun and Daniel's girlfriend in this story. Eve is not a former nun.
Eve is Bono's daughter, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. We saw her playing Maid Marian in the 2018 Robin Hood movie. Yeah, so, okay, those two characters, complex interaction between the two of them. Oddly enough, surprisingly, not at all. Eve Hewson's being a former nun, the character plays into the story at one stage, allowing them to have interactions with some religious people.
Yep.
And I think they do a really good job on this. Eve has to do some stuff in this that could have been played very poorly, but she does it expertly.
Okay.
And actually is part of the main, I'll call it the Steven Spielberg chill. He has a way to do that, and I don't mean relaxing, where you get a chill running up your spine.
Okay, yeah.
She provides a lot of that in this film. And the guy, the actor who's playing Daniel, he is solid throughout this. He has to appear like a sort of a Mulder character, you know.
Yeah.
Scully and Mulder.
Yes, yes. So love that for him.
He does that in this quite effectively.
Yeah, nice.
As well as being surprised by some of the things that happened to him. Emily Blunt enters into the story as Margaret, a Kansas City TV meteorologist and also an aspiring anchor person. She wants to level up from meteorology, where her, you know, her defining characteristics so far, reading the weather on the Kansas City TV, is to do the weather shimmy when there's hailstorm. You know, she wants to do more than that. This is her chance in this story. We've seen Emily Blunt everywhere. You know, the Adjustment Bureau, Looper, Edge of Tomorrow, most excellently in A Quiet Place 1 and 2, and also 3. She's working on that too. And she's Mary Poppins.
Yeah.
Y'all. yeah, she's great in this. There's a moment which you've seen in the trailer where she speaks in alien language.
Yeah.
And she does that herself. They do a little
bit commitment.
Of tech jiggery pokery with it, but that's her doing the voice acting for that. I loved her in this. This is actually one of her best performances.
Oh, nice. I like when she's given material, like really meaty stuff, because she's a great comedy actress, great drama, great action, and I want to see her have more opportunities to do the full gamut of that.
Now, there's no surprise that there's a bit of a connection between her character and the cybersecurity person, but we'll leave that to the film to explain. We also have Colin Firth.
Oh, Colin.
Playing an aptly named guy called Noah, who's the head of a corporation that's been tasked with examining and reverse engineering a lot of the alien technology that has been accumulated over the years. I haven't seen him play a villain too often. I have seen him, but, I mean, he's a bit dodgy in Kingsman.
Only a touch, though.
Only a touch, yeah. And slightly dodgy in Young Sherlock.
Yeah, again, but again, just a little edge.
But here he is, a straight-out villain, and I want to see more Colin Firth playing a villain.
Yeah, I think it's his time. It's like how Hugh Grant started to take on those edgy roles. Let's get Colin Firth in there taking edgy roles.
In this case, as the head of this corporation, it's kind of like Stranger Things in a lot of ways. I feel like that's in play here.
He's like the Matthew Modine of it all.
Yeah, he's the guy pulling the strings. And but he has actually more – normally you would expect him not to be a field agent, although, you know, Kingsman certainly was.
He's got the chops.
But in this one – the karate chops as well. In this one, he actually is a – and I've seen him play an action hero before when he was in that Arthurian movie, The Last Legion.
Yes.
Gave him a sword and everything. And I was like, oh, gosh. Here he is quite ruthless and also the wielder of one of the particular powers that are in play in this film. Because they're not just playing to the flying saucer trope.
Yeah.
I thought he was absolutely excellent in this. He just blew me away. as did I've lost his name out of my notes. There's a guy who plays
is it Coleman Domingo?
Yes. Mm. No, it's not. Yes, it is. You're right. Coleman Domingo, who played the voice of Unicron in Transformers Rise of the Beasts. He is Victor Strand in Fear the Walking Dead. Norman Osborn's voice in Friendly Neighbourhood Spider-Man. He is playing another person who works for the company as well in this. But he's a more benign voice.
I love Coleman Domingo.
He's great.
He's in a lot of stuff at the moment. He's really having kind of an uptick. And I just think he's a real delight.
Often he plays the villain. Here he is not. I enjoyed his performance immensely. Somebody who just shows up in a kind of a throwaway role as Margaret's boyfriend is Wyatt Russell.
Oh, just trot him out for a scene or two.
Yeah. But he's all right in this. It's like he's on the verge of breaking up with her, but he hasn't told her yet. There's a great cast in here. Elizabeth Marvel plays Sister Mara of the Abbess of the Monastery of St. Clair of the Dawn. She's in this. And I just had a lot of fun with this. One of the several contrary reasons I enjoyed this film is that it's not really a full disclosure.
Okay.
Now, it mostly skates around the built-in question of what impact the revelation of mostly officially concealed long-term contact with extraterrestrials would have upon humanity in favour of the procedural of achieving the revelation.
Okay.
It does rather amusingly, I thought, deal with that religious implications with a fairly elegant neatness. It's kind of brief, but I thought, yeah, that's what I would feel. And I have no religious inclinations at all.
So is it more like a cyber thriller espionage type thing than an invasion trope?
It's not an invasion trope.
Yeah.
In a sense, it's a continuation by somewhat less alien hardware orientated means. You know, so it's not like Close Encounters. It's not quite like E.T. It is like the intimate scale of E.T.
Got it. So it's more about the technology, language, contact angle.
Brain powers.
Okay. Yeah. Ooh, okay.
Normally the focal point of Spielberg's films have been like UFOs. Mm. Or the aliens themselves.
Yeah. But mostly, this is more about what's being done with that.
Mostly they're reduced to grainy archival footage.
Mm.
And it's quite a throwback film too. You know, I feel that 80s chase sort of thing going on with that usual sort of you can drive out of any situation.
I guess it's like tapping into what the people want to see in a way, like that old school kind of action. Yeah.
And that automobile chase narrative deliberately owes a lot to both Jewel and Sugarland Express, as well as E.T. and Close Encounters as well. So in place of the spaceship hardware, we're given a really intense take on telepathy.
Okay.
Alternatively threatening or uplifting depending on who's using it. Like Emily Blunt, good. Colin Firth, bad.
Yeah. Oh. It'd be fun to see that.
I did love the way that Williams dialed his score down for this.
Okay.
Something more supportively subtle, except for that chase bit. And the ending is going to throw some people.
Okay.
And that's okay.
Yep.
I get that. But I kind of nodded in calm acceptance that to proceed further would have required a whole other movie.
Got it.
And I was free to write that other movie if I went, say, after watching this to lunch with friends.
I like that. A bit of a discussion to have after.
And it felt a bit inceptional.
Yeah, all right. I like that, yeah.
So I think it's no bad thing to leave the punter questioning.
I agree. I think
other people may hate that.
Yeah, some people don't like an ambiguous ending.
But I felt that the movie's not titled The Day After Disclosure.
true.
You know.
Yeah. Disclosure Day minus one or whatever, plus one.
But for me it was worth it because I got that Spielberg shiver.
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking this. My sense of wonder was activated. Even if some of the things that happen in this, you go, would that really be the way it would play out?
But you could suspend the disbelief to go with it.
Yeah, he sort of made me do that. And then there was also the fact of, would this revelation be really believed?
Yeah.
Well, actually, if you go by the tropes that are in the film and on display, there's a built-in explanation for that.
Okay, so it's kind of thought out.
Yeah, it is actually the thought that counts in this film.
Okay.
Yeah, so I enjoyed Disclosure Day.
Yeah.
It's a different take than E.T. or Close Encounters of the third kind. And boy, he must really believe in UFOs.
Well, has fun telling stories about them.
My take on it is I believe in the phenomena of UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd have to go a very long way before that actually be extraterrestrial contact.
Yeah.
I believe in aliens because otherwise it would be a massive waste of space.
Yeah.
But whether or not they've landed on the lawn of the White House, and there are times when I'd like to see a UFO and not a UFC land on the White House lawn.
Yeah.
It's like, take me to your leader. Oh, well, I'm afraid that's his floor show. I'm sticking out from under your saucer. You know, that sort of thing. All right, that's it for Zero G for today.
It is.
So no out track today because we've gabbled on too much.
We got very caught up there.
Yes. We'll go out straight to Joe Brunatic with Astral Glamour. And, yeah.
Thank you, Rob.
And welcome back, Megan.
Thank you. Very good to be back.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.